Welcome to AUSA's Army Matters podcast. This is Family Voices with Patty Barron. It is my distinct pleasure to have as our guest today, Colonel Deidre Tahan. Colonel Tahan is the commander of Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. Previous to that, she commanded the U.S. Army Health Clinic at Schofield Barracks, Hawaii. Colonel Tahan received her Bachelor of Arts in Sports Science at Ohio Wesleyan University, earned her master's degree in physical therapy from the U.S. Army Baylor University, completed her PhD in biomechanics from the University of Texas, and her doctoral degree in physical therapy from Baylor University. Dr. Tahan, oh my goodness, that's amazing. Oh,
thank you.
Welcome to the Army Matters Family Voices.
Thank you for having me, Patty. Great to be here.
Colonel Tahan, it's always important for me, for our audience members, to get to know our speakers a little bit better. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Canton, Ohio, which is a small town about an hour south of Cleveland, home of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and just was always raised with a lot of sports and athletics and activity as I was growing up, which really led to my passion to be a physical therapist, to be able to figure out how to treat all the injuries that come from all those fun sports and activities.
That's very, very true. And why the Army? Why did you choose the Army to practice physical therapy?
Well, you know, less than 24% of Americans qualify to serve the Army, and less than 1% do. And when I knew I wanted to be a physical therapist, I went to Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And I spent the day with the physical therapy clinic there, and I left knowing that there was no other place that I wanted to practice medicine than in the Army to be able to serve those top 1% of folks that give so much to our country.
It is a really wonderful opportunity, isn't it, to serve, the Army, our nation, but also all those young soldiers, those men and women that choose to serve our country. It's really inspiring, I think.
Oh, it's a phenomenal honor to be able to serve those folks that give so much. You know, you think of all that they do for our nation, the cold nights, the long deployments, the long field exercises, the time away from families. And if they get injured, I want to make sure they have the best possible care. That's awesome.
And Colonel Tahan, when it comes to Army families, what are your thoughts on how we can improve the health and resilience of our Army families?
Well, just as there's the top 1% of Americans that serve, those 1% have family members, and they also dedicate a lot to our country. And so as I have been advancing in my career in the Army, I've always had a special spot to make sure that what we're doing for the soldiers, we have equal opportunities and programs available for their families to really help them with all the stresses that come with military life.
And I think that many of our families would say that the stresses affect them physically as well as mentally. And there are so many ways that you can be impacted by bad habits or too much stress. Would you
Yes.
agree to that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the stress that military families go through, it's not just the moves, the frequent moves, but it's sometimes their lack of proximity to close family members, mm-hmm. right, and their support structure. And being able to go into a new environment, making sure that their children have schools that are going to continue to advance them academically and let them grow emotionally and physically.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a lot that weighs on our families, and so we want to be there to support them through this process.
Absolutely. So you have always been such a great friend to AUSA, Colonel Tahan, and you're one of our very favorite panelists, and you've had actually been at many of our military family forums at the annual meeting that we have in October. A few years ago, you provided some really great tips for healthy eating habits, I remember this one in particular, such as placing certain food in a certain place in your refrigerator. That was a great tip. I use it all the time. Can you share some of the ideas that you have around healthy eating habits?
Yeah. So, you know, the food we put in our body is our fuel, right? And I like to think of it very much like your vehicle. You wouldn't put low-octane vehicle in a high-octane car, right? But a lot of times we tend to eat what's easily available mm-hmm. and what's convenient. And so the idea is to find a way to make the easy, convenient food the food that you would rather fuel your body with. And there's a lot of really interesting tips to do that. One is that your healthy leftovers from your meal should go into clear saran wrap, while the leftovers that you want people to eat less should be in Reynolds wrap. And because then when they're in the fridge, you can actually see the food. Believe it or not, it matters if you put the fruits on your kitchen counter in a clear bowl versus an opaque bowl. If it's in a clear bowl, your family will grab fruits and vegetables more sitting on the counter than if they can't see it through the bowl. The other trip is when you're sitting on the couch eating, that you actually don't just bring the bag with you, but you actually just fill the bowl up and you put the bag away, so that if you want to have another bowl, you actually have to get up and go to it. And what they found is that that helps limit the mindless eating that happens a lot of times when we're bored, we're stressed, and we're just not thinking about what we're putting in our mouths. We're just eating out of a habit or out of just in a non-mindful way. Mm-hmm. One of the really interesting things they did is at a movie theater, they actually made very stale old popcorn. I mean, this popcorn was a week old. It was nasty, stale popcorn. And then they measured how much of a mindless or mindful eater you were. And what they found is that when they put you in a movie theater and they give you popcorn, if you're a mindless eater, you will eat that popcorn even if it's stale, nasty, and old. But if they break that habit up by just having you use your non-dominant hand to eat the popcorn, you realized it was stale popcorn and you stopped eating it. So breaking up your habit by saying, all right, if I'm going to sit here, maybe I'll use my non-dominant hand and I can eat as many potato chips as I want, but I'm not going to, just switching it up will make you realize, be a little bit more mindful of eating and hopefully make you eat less of the food you don't want to eat.
That's really, that is fascinating. I never thought of that, but you're right. If I'm going to use my left hand, I'm going to think about it more because I never really use my left hand when I eat, although I do like stale, old, nasty popcorn, to be truthful with the world. I'm going to ask you a question that's a little bit offbeat, but I've been seeing it a lot in my Facebook feed about grapes. Have you seen it that apparently if you eat a bowl of grapes, it's really, not only is it good for you, but it fills you up more than if you were to eat a bowl of popcorn?
Well, this is true for almost all real whole food, right? Mm-hmm. So if you look at a bowl of grapes or a bowl of broccoli, there is a lot more volume to that food with a lot less calories per volume. So there's stretch receptors in your stomach. And so as you eat food that has high volume and it hits those stretch receptors, it sends a message to your brain saying, I'm full. So you actually get fuller on food that has a higher volume per low calorie content. Grapes is one of those, broccoli is another one. But that's why eating and starting with a salad of a meal actually is very beneficial, because you start eating the salad first, it helps fill up your stomach, and then whatever else you eat, you're going to hit that fullness sensation earlier. Mm-hmm. So there is actually some good science to be starting your main meals with a salad first, because it has that bulkiness, and it also has all the nutrients that your body needs.
So the French have it all wrong. So there has been talk of Army families experiencing food insecurity. And what is food insecurity, and what would you tell a family experiencing it?
Food insecurity is a real issue in our military, and it's one in which we don't fully appreciate at the same time. So they have, the poverty line is about 12 to 13% of Americans, but the ALICE line, and I'll describe the ALICE line in a minute, sometimes is up to 50% of Americans are below the ALICE line. And what the ALICE line means is, for your area where you live, can you afford food, transportation, housing, childcare, and healthcare? And what is the cost for those five things in your living area? And if you're below the ALICE line, then you have to give up one of those things to be able to make ends meet. And food insecurity is one of those issues. And the estimates right now is 1 in 7 military families are food insecure.
That's amazing.
It is. It's a big number. And it's not as big as our veterans. Our veterans is almost at 24 to 25% of veterans are food insecure.
Wow.
And so if you don't have the ability to have proper nutrition, which is our fuel source, health issues come from that. And it's not just physical health issues, but it's also the mental and emotional stress that comes from being food insecure. Mm-hmm. And so it really has a holistic toll on your health.
And so if a family is experiencing food insecurity in the military, We've seen articles about them going to food banks or them, not really being able to eat. And so a child might go to school and not have breakfast. And I don't know if Army installation schools have free breakfast. I don't think they do. And so, and you saw a little bit of that when you were in Hawaii at Schofield Barracks.
Right. So what I would say for that is, one, go to Army Community Service, find out what resources your family is qualifies for. It might be the WIC program, the Women's Infant Children's Program. At Fort Riley, they did an amazing job. They brought the WIC program into the Women's Health Clinic. So as the females became pregnant and they were starting a family, they stopped at the WIC program right then and determined if they qualified for that assistance program to help ensure that they would minimize any risk of food insecurity. So please use your Army Community Service. Go out and find out which services you qualify for, and then use those services. They're there to support you.
That's great. ACS is there to support you, and I would agree 100% with that. So let's go on to something that always eludes me, and that would be sleep. It has become a huge conversation topic in the last 5 years or so, but sleep can be so elusive. What advice can you give to folks regarding sleep tactics?
All right. Well, I will tell you, as the commander of Walter Reed, we are the home of the Department of Defense's largest sleep lab, and we do the brain health research for the Army. And part of that is really understanding sleep. And believe it or not, if you wear a fitness device on your wrist, it was originally created at Walter Reed. The original actigraphs that actually measure sleep are now in every type of fitness watch out there that measures sleep, was originally developed by the Army at Walter Reed Army Institute of Research.
I did not know that. That's awesome. Yeah.
And so our sleep experts will tell us that there is nothing that replaces sleep like sleep, unfortunately. And the only part of your body that really needs to sleep is your brain. And what happens when you sleep is short-term memories become long-term memories as you sleep on it. So it's important for your children to get sleep, because as they're learning in school, they don't really process that information and put it into long-term memory till they sleep on it. You also know that any problem that you're dealing with today that seems really too hard, it's always much easier in the morning. Mom always says, sleep on it, it'll be better in the morning. And it's true, because our resilience improves after a good night's sleep. And believe it or not, your physical health is very critical to sleep. They did a study where they measured people for a long period of time. I believe it was 30 to 60 days. They measured everything they did. And then they took them to a hotel and they injected each one of them with the flu virus. And then they waited to see who got the flu. And the only thing that protected people from not getting the flu, even after the flu virus was injected into them, was those that got a good night's sleep in the weeks and months prior to getting the flu virus. And so the sleep is huge in our immune response. It has a huge impact. And the good news is there's 10 simple habits that help you get after good sleep. And I'm not going to go through all 10 today. That would be a little much.
Yeah.
But, you know, you need a cool, dark, quiet place to sleep. And sleep has to become a priority, in which you schedule it and you try to go to bed at the same time and wake up at the same time. And that's where the challenge comes in, right, in our lifestyle. But then realize that if you have a big event, you can bank sleep before that big event. So if you know that you're getting ready to go on a big family vacation and you guys are going to be just really pushing it to the limit, you know, that week or two before, really try to get an extra 15, 20 minutes of sleep, and you can bank it before you go on it. And it's always important afterwards to pay off that sleep debt and try to sleep a little bit more after you've had a period of days where you've been sleep deprived. But the reality is, even after just 3 days of getting only 5 hours of sleep, you have about a 20% cognitive deficit, so that your ability to process information and be able to make decisions that you would make after a good night's sleep really declines by about 20%. So it's a real impact when we don't get sleep. And culturally, the Army really needs to do better with sleep, both our soldiers and our family members.
That is so right. I'm going to out myself and tell you that last night I went to sleep really late. I actually probably went to bed around 12 or 12:30, which is really late. I'm not really as sharp this morning as I would like to be. And so you can feel it right away. I mean, I just know I'm dragging. But sometimes you have new babies in the home, military life in general, as you were saying, the Army's not great about telling you to get a lot of sleep, can really disrupt your sleep routines. Any advice for those that are sleep deprived, that have really tried the tips and are still having a hard time?
Especially for young families with babies, I think it's really important to talk to someone if you're having trouble with sleep and really coming up with a sleep plan. And one that will actually help your child get into a better sleep habit, and also figuring out how to do the trade-off between you and your spouse for those sleepless nights. And there is a better way of doing it than just stumbling through the process and figuring, hey, it'll get better at some point. And then a few years later, you're like, we never figured this out just yet. But we have sleep experts in our primary care clinics that are ready to talk to you about how to do this. It is part of how they're trained, and they exist in the health, in the primary care clinics to ensure that they can help folks with problems like sleep or tobacco cessation or other things. But although it's not your primary care provider, we have these embedded experts within the team to make sure that you can have that holistic care when you go to primary care.
Yeah, I never thought of that. It's like a life coach, but it's a sleep coach.
That's right.
And I might need to go visit a sleep coach myself because it is so important. That's great. For many stay-at-home moms with small children, and I'm, you know, always very partial to stay-at-home moms with small children since I have two amazing little granddaughters stationed at Schofield Barracks. If they either are stay-at-home moms with small kids or they're working moms with kids, exercise can be really difficult to put into your routine. And even here, I always say to myself, okay, this is the year I'm going to make sure I get 10,000 steps every day. And I'm lucky if I get three, truth be told. So how can you incorporate working out into your routine, whether you're at work full time or you're home with small children?
The first thing I would say is making sure you know what your goals are and being able to have that, but not to beat yourself up too much on this. And so the study I'd like to highlight was done in Las Vegas, and they had two hotel staffs. And they told the one hotel staff and the maids there that what they did every day actually contributed to their overall health. And the other one they just measured, and they were still hotel maids. They had to clean the same number of rooms. But the folks that realized what they were doing each day was actually good for their health actually got healthier. And why I share that is, as a parent of new children, you are running around a lot during the day. That contributes to your overall physical activity count for that day. And it is part of keeping you not sedentary, right? So even if you don't have the time to go out and do a full hour workout, but you're chasing children around in your house, that counts to keeping you healthy, right? So when you look at moderate versus vigorous exercise, a lot of young families are doing a lot of moderate exercise each day. They're just not counting it or giving themselves credit for it. And that's why some of the activity devices help, because you can measure your steps. Like you said, 10,000 steps a day. You could see how active you are throughout the day and make a judgment call on how to adjust it. But it doesn't need to be a lot. One of the things they've shown in health is even if you can get 3 10-minute walks a day, if you can't get a full 30-minute walks, but you can have 3 10-minute walks a day, that also has a health benefit towards it. So the first thing I would do is tell folks to, you know, set your realistic goal, but also don't be too hard on yourselves because you're probably doing more for your health than you're giving your credit for. But second is realize, make the small things matter. And whether it's changing your diet or changing your sleep or changing your exercise, the goal is to make a lifestyle change, not a 6-week change. So you want to make things that are sustainable and things that you want to do and that you're willing to do. And so maybe it's 3 10-minute walks throughout the day is all that you can do. Then make that your goal, mm-hmm. And then be proud of yourself for accomplishing it.
I love that so much. Thank you, because I do beat myself up all the time. I will say, though, that I try really hard at work not to use the phone if I'm going to talk to someone in the building. I will get out of my chair, go walk to where they are, and then talk to them, and then add some more steps in there, because I do have a Fitbit, if you will, and I like to look at least some progress, if, even if it's minimal. So it's good to hear that even some progress is better than no progress.
But it's those little things that matter, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to call somebody that's just down the hallway. I'm going to walk to them, right? Or I'm not going to take the elevator. I'm going to take the one flight of stairs. Or I'm going to park further away in the parking lot and actually walk into work because I know I'm 5 minutes early for work. So I have time to walk that 5 minutes in. It's those small things that add up that really make a difference. And again, now, if you want to become an Ironman, that's not the plan for an Ironman.
No.
But for overall health and wellness, it really is that you're living an active lifestyle. And when they look at who the cities in the world where they have the most folks that live to 100 years of age, it's not that these folks are triathletes. It's not that they actually are doing heavy strength training every day. It's that they live an active lifestyle in which they're out. They have strong family relationships, strong social relationships, that they invest in those. And that really provides a foundation for longevity.
That's great. I'm going to do this. This is great. One of the things that I've always admired about you, Colonel Tahan, is your passion and dedication to soldiers and military families. I mean, it just shines right through you. You're an amazing person. When you commanded at Schofield Barracks Health Clinic, you came up with innovative ways to serve military families when some of the issues that were presented in the clinic were not necessarily medical issues. Can you share some of that with us?
Yeah, so there's a couple things I would love to highlight. The first one that I would like to highlight is how we help new families. So one of the things that happens in Hawaii is that there's a lot of young married couples that start families, but they are obviously at a minimum a 6-hour flight from where their relatives are if they're on the West Coast, and it could be much longer than that depending on where their families lived. And so you had a lot of young families in Hawaii starting off so excited, but without the social support that normally happens with young families. And so there's a program called Centering Pregnancy that I'm just a huge fan of, because what we did is we brought everybody that was close to delivering at the same time, and we brought them in together, and they went through their whole pregnancy together. And so let's say there was 6 to 9 women that were all going to deliver around the same date. Well, they went to all their appointments together. They had group appointments to bring up conversations. They really created their own support network. And then after they delivered, they now had the support network already integrated to help offset the fact that families were a flight away. And it was really successful. Now, granted, if you didn't want a support network and this is your 3rd or 4th child, we still had the individual one-on-one care, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But for those that were new to this and really wanted to have a cohort of new moms there to help them through the process, it was really key. The other thing that was really critical is that we really partnered with our chaplains and the community to make sure we had a real tapestry of resources available for folks, depending on where your needs were, so we can meet you where you needed to be met. And a lot of times, the healthcare facility couldn't be that. And I'll go back to the finance example. So we had some folks come in and they had some mental health conditions, but as we peeled that potato back or peeled that onion back and we looked at it, what we realized is that a lot of that came to underlying financial stress. And so instead of talking about the stress that was the result of the financial stress, we actually helped got them to Army Community Service and get them to the resources they needed to help solve that underlying thing, which is obviously not a healthcare issue, but it can have health ramifications. And so we implemented a program called Move to Health, and it taught all of the providers to really try to dig a little deeper and look more holistically at the individual in front of you. The one family story that just always touches my heart is a family that was married for about 15 years. He was deployed every other year. Every year they came home, they had another baby. So I believe the number was 6 or 7 children that they had. And the last 3 deployments, she did not feel that her husband came home like he was before he left. She didn't know exactly what was going on, but she was coming in because she was pre-diabetic, pre-hypertension, and gaining weight. In a normal setting, you would have treated that with exercise and nutrition. But under Move to Health, and we peeled the onion back and we showed her all the things that could be contributing to her health, she started to cry and told us the rest of that story that I shared up front. And so instead of treating the exercise and nutrition for her hypertension and pre-diabetes and weight gain, we got him into marriage counseling. We got him into family counseling. We got him into mental health to see if this was PTSD, because all she ever knew was being an Army wife. She didn't know what she would do if he left her or if he was having an affair on her. She didn't know what to do. And so she changed her health habits as a response to deal with the stress of the unknown. And once she shared that, we were able to really get the family into the right care they needed, and they're doing well.
That's what I love about you and the focus that you put at Schofield, a health clinic, and that is, it's more than just, you know, blood pressure and temperature and heart rate. It's asking and talking about what's going on in your environment, what's going on in your life, as well as your health, because it's all so interconnected and it's a very holistic approach. I think that is so, so great. I'm actually really excited that I've been enrolled in a program at Fort Belvoir Community Hospital called the Orange Team Pilot, and that's the approach that they're taking right now. It's a very holistic view of everything that's going on, not only in my physical health, but in my life, and then just kind of navigating through that. So it's fantastic.
And the thing that I'll say, it's all the small things we do each day that have a big impact. There was this one soldier that was about to be boarded for weight gain, and he didn't realize where he could start. And he started by changing his lunch. And we'll all laugh at this, but he started with a double cheeseburger with bacon, large fry, large soda every day from Burger King for lunch.
Oh my goodness.
And his first step that he was willing to do was to go down to a single cheeseburger, no bacon, medium fry, medium soda. And he saw progress. And then every week or so, he made one additional small change. He lost 40 pounds. And again, no dietitian would have told him, still keep going to Burger King. But what was he willing to do? He was willing to go from a double cheeseburger with bacon to a single cheeseburger with no bacon. And that started him on his road. And so we're finding out that really understanding, we call it motivational interviewing in the healthcare area, mm-hmm. but really finding out what you're willing to do to meet your goals and then help guide you down the path of what you're willing to do. At one point, he changed from soda to Gatorade. Well, that made no difference. They're both sugar-filled beverages, right? But then after Gatorade, he went to water. And it was what a dietitian would have agreed to, but he didn't get to water until he made the step to Gatorade, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And so, again, it's about what are you willing to do, and realize that small things really make a huge difference in your health. And you don't have to really change and uproot your lifestyle. It's about, what are you willing to do today to invest in yourself? Because right now, as Army families, you invest more in our nation than most folks do around the world. So what are you willing to do to invest in yourself? Because you've already given so much to our country.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's those small steps, and not to beat yourself up because you're not going from one step to 10,000 steps. You know, maybe I'm going from one step to 3,000 steps, and that's pretty good.
That's right. Yeah. That's absolutely right.
That's great. You're now commanding at Walter Reed Army Institute of Research in Bethesda, Maryland. What type of work is at the forefront of the Institute?
I'll tell you what, Walter Reed Army Institute of Research is a phenomenal organization. We have about 2,500 folks around the world in 26 locations, and we are out there with two big missions. One, we invite infectious diseases. So a lot of the vaccines that are currently out there started at Walter Reed. We fight malaria and traveler's diarrhea, right? And everything in between. When Zika came out, we had the first human trial of a Zika vaccine when that came out. And we also work on things like Ebola and Marburg. So we look at the whole gamut of infectious disease. The soldiers go to 140 countries a year. On average, the Army sends them to them. And so wherever they show up, they better be protected from the diseases in those countries that we don't have in the United States. And so that's half our mission. And the other half is brain health. And really, it talks about everything from resilience and sleep to traumatic brain injury. And so everything in that brain health arena, to include psychiatry research. And so we have that full gamut over there. And the talk today really kind of reminds us of the importance of military families and its impact on and its overall health. And the research at RARE would agree with that, that the importance of building those communities in our strong military families.
That's amazing. And I'm so afraid that we've run out of time, Colonel Tahan. It's been just a pleasure to talk to you and to learn about all of the great things that you're involved with and that your team are involved with. So folks, we've come to the end of our podcast episode. To all our listeners, thank you for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere that podcasts are found. Thank you so much for being with us again today. For those of you listening, keep it locked here for all Army Matters and for the next week's episode featuring Army thought leaders. I am Patty Barron with Family Voices, Family Strong, Army Strong.